Let's welcome National Commissioner Modise and team, our researchers and the media people. We are proposing that we start with the report on the Protectors Disclosures Amendment Bill, which we all have just received now. So, with your permission, I will allow some 5 minutes so that we all can read, because none of us has seen it before. Honorable Breitenbach?
No, that's
fine.
I want to engage with the document.
Okay, no, that's fine. No, take your time. Commissioner Modise, you'll bear with us. We just want to get this out of the way. honourable members, you are once more most welcome. I guess you have all had an opportunity to go through the document. Could we first get indications if there are any corrections, Honourable Breitenbach?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to paragraph 8, that does not, in our view, accurately reflect our discussions on the matter, and we would propose a new clause 8 that in fact does accurately reflect our views on the matter.
Excuse me. Will all members listen and note so that we engage with that and make sure that what we accept is the position of the committee?
We propose that the first sentence be amended to read as follows. The Democratic Alliance and the African Christian Democratic Party oppose the introduction of a criminalization clause for false disclosure. I'll write it out for you and give you our proposal. We then, the second sentence, from in their view, to with the intention to the end of that sentence, with the intention to cause harm, we propose that that sentence be removed in its entirety. It certainly does not reflect our view. And then from there is concerned remains the same until the very last sentence. That last sentence we would propose should read as follows. There is no evidence to suggest widespread abuse of whistleblowing, which could necessitate criminalization of false disclosures. But I'll write it out into a paragraph and give it to you.
Thanks. I think with the first narrative that he's suggesting, I think I agree with what she's saying. But the second one does not make sense. The second one does not just make any sense, because the whole discussion the whole day was centered around this issue, and all deliberations from members who supported we're speaking about this issue, about the intention to cause harm. I think that is the narrative that is explained by section 9B, small letter B. So I think, I don't think there may have any other amendments with regard to. But the first part, I think, I agree with. Say, person says, you recorded me as saying this, but I was not saying that. I was saying the other thing. Is there anyone who can be competent to say to a person, that's not what you meant, that's what you meant? Because it's not a question of whether or not you agree with their position. It's a question whether what they are saying they were saying is not what should be reflected. Because we have to reflect what they wanted to say. And they say the way it's captured is not what they wanted it said. So we are not dealing with the substance or correctness of the whole thing. We are dealing with what they wanted to express. They say what they wanted to express is what they are saying now. I thought we are collectively adopting the report, which must reflect our overall. But if you are of the view that we will have to get their view as a written thing to the report,
I think that the report is not expected to reflect the position of the meeting. Dealing with a specific paragraph on what they were saying. They say what we heard today, not what they were saying. But let me hear this first before I get back to you. Honorable Hobbs?
Yes, Chair. I think the Honourable Bongo neglected to read the whole of the report, because the prevailing stance on this matter, as a matter of fact, is captured in paragraph 7. The stance he now once again explained. And I think you're quite correct. If the committee to seek consensus on the report wants to include a paragraph which captures the opposing view for the record, then surely the majority can't decide what the opposing view was.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now that we've got an amended paragraph, let's hear what it says and then deal with that amended paragraph.
Read it to you. The DA and ACDP oppose the introduction of a criminalization clause for false disclosure. There is concern that the proposed insertion will have a chilling effect, especially on the number of people that are prepared to make protected disclosure. Is declining. Further, there are other remedies to discourage people from making false disclosures. There is no evidence to suggest the widespread abuse of whistleblowing, which could necessitate criminalization of false disclosure.
We will take it as it is, Chairperson. It's their position.
Honorable Short, is that also your...
Thank you, Chair, yes. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, I think it's fair, and the formulation also to me reflects what I got from the two political parties. So, any other matter on the report?
Sorry, Chair.
Oh, all right. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. On number 7, the first sentence on number 7, the last part of it, if we can delete disclosure of information to whistleblowing, and delete also disclosure of. So the sentence will now read as follows. There was a concern that making it an offense to intentionally disclose information may discourage whistleblowing. That's how the sentence should now read.
Are we together? Anyone with a problem with the formulation? If none, is that one?
That's all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Any other correction on the rules?
Thank you, Chair. The same paragraph in the third last line of that paragraph, the sentence that starts, "For this reason, the committee agrees that there should be consequences for a person who intentionally disclosure." I think that should be discloses. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Any other correction? If there are no further corrections, we adopt this as a correct minute. Any proposal for acceptance? Honorable Majake, any seconder?
I just want to make it very clear that we would be prepared to support the report in this format, but we certainly will oppose the bill.
No, I think
That is fair. That's what democracy is all about. In this meeting, we all agree on the report, but in the House, we all reserve the right to make our own input. Okay. So it's the proposal by Honorable Majake, seconded by Honorable Breitenbach. And why Bongo? Because I noted. Or proposal by. No, this is not an ANC meeting. It's a committee meeting. Honorable. Yes. Can we just finalize this?
Just for clarity, before you finalize it.
Okay.
I must admit that I was not part of the meeting. I had to prioritize another portfolio committee meeting. But then before we can even agree on the adoption, for which I will reserve my comment, at best I would do that. Get clarity on Honorable Breitenbach's position, that the DA would likely oppose the bill, but for now endorse the report. I think that smacks of double standards. Can we clarify that? Can we please clarify that the DA should either not agree to the report, and we know later in the tabling of the report or the bill in Parliament, they will maintain the same position?
Subject to correction. My understanding is that we have deliberated on the matter, and we have a report before us which correctly reflects what happened in this committee. And by seconding Honorable Breitenbach, accept that what is in this report is a correct reflection of what happened here. But that is different from supporting the adoption of the legislature, of the legislation by the House. So there are two separate processes. So there are no double standards. Honorable
Chair, I think what assists us is that the positions of the DA and the ACDP are set out in the report. And I think that's why. When we come to the debate on the bill, it will be a different issue. Thank you, Chair.
So there's no double standards. I think it's how it works. Can we get a proposal for adoption afresh? Honorable Majake? This is not an ANC meeting. It's a Parliament committee.
I'll second the adoption. But let me just tell you, it is only a parliamentary committee meeting when it suits you. And most times only when the Honourable Self is here.
Thank you very much. The report has been adopted. All those that are in favour of the adoption of the report, can you all raise your hands? I forgot myself. Okay. Honorable Matthijs, are you abstaining or voting against?
For me? For now, because I don't have the benefit of the debate, I would advise to reserve my comments and express our views.
Okay. No, that's fair as well. Members, we allowed our researchers to do some work, and they worked very hard even during holidays, and they completed the report, and we are happy to allow Mpo Ntate Mpo Matabati to make a presentation, and I think the National Commission and team will be happy to see that Parliament also support the work that they do.
Thanks, Chairperson. Quickly, I've got the two reports, research reports, that I'm going to present to the committee quickly. So the first one is on case studies on halfway houses, particularly in the Western Cape. Without any further waste of time, Chair, the first, the purpose and outline, purpose of this presentation is to share with the committee the findings on the case studies on halfway houses in the Western Cape, operations and challenges. On definitions, I'm not going to deal much with definitions, except to focus on halfway houses. DCS defines halfway houses as a community-based residential facility for probationers and parolees without monitorable address or support system. In terms of the methodology of this study, what were the aims and objectives of this study? Among other things, Chair, was to look at how are these halfway houses operated. Remember, halfway houses is a relatively new phenomenon in South Africa, so we wanted to understand how are these halfway houses operated, particularly in our country. What are the day-to-day activities of parolees in the halfway houses? What are the programs provided for parolees in halfway houses? And what are some of the challenges experienced by residents of the house? And what are the general challenges experienced in operating halfway houses? In terms of the approach, an empirical study has been conducted in the form of interviews with operators of halfway houses in the Western Cape. Semi-structured in-depth interviews were used as a method of data collection. Two organizations were interviewed, one being Beautiful Ashes, the other one is Realistic. Those are the two organizations providing halfway houses in the Western Cape. As indicated, the study was only limited to halfway houses in the Western Cape. In terms of the background to halfway houses in South Africa, Chair, in her budget speech in 2011, the then Minister of Correctional Services, Minister Nosiviwe, indicated that DCS would start with a pilot project for the establishment of halfway houses in South Africa. And immediately after the announcement, the department explored two options: to establish halfway houses owned by DCS or to form partnership. Desktop research was conducted and experimental visits were undertaken to establish best practices in other countries. DCS has therefore established partnership with different NPOs to run halfway houses in South Africa. The first halfway house pilot was launched in February in 2012 at Naturena, Johannesburg. In terms of the numbers of halfway houses and budget allocation, Eastern Cape at the time of the research, 6, Gauteng 8, Free State, Northern Cape 7, LMN 8, KwaZulu-Natal 7. And also in terms of the budget allocation of halfway houses, these are the amount, 2012-13, 120,000. The amount increased to almost 9 million in 2015-16. And why the need for halfway houses in South Africa? You would be aware that families of offenders live in impoverished circumstances with no extra resources to help them change their lives. Also, the issue of relationship between offenders and families is sometimes fraught with unresolved emotional issues. The offending rate among juveniles are extremely high, and halfway house can assist in reducing repeat offending, especially in this group, and offending in halfway houses is reported to be low. And the role of halfway houses, among other things, Chair, it caters for parolees and probationers without support system or monitorable addresses. It acts as a bridge between correctional center and the community for those who do not have support system, and it can also instill family values to parolees and probationers. And somehow it replaces, it is a replacement of a family or a home within the community. In terms of the findings of this study, especially in the first case study, which is Realistic Halfway House, this house is based in Strandfontein and was established in 2013 by Mr. Solomon Madikane. The house can accommodate a total of 8 residents, male residents between the age of 20 years, with the oldest parolee being 54 years old. And since its establishment, a total of 30 parolees have successfully passed through the house and not returned to crime. And what are the day-to-day activities, typical day for parolees during the week? Among other things, the activities of residents in the house is managed through a roster system. Now, it includes waking up at 6, shower, breakfast, and others go to work. And after returning from work around 5 o'clock in the evening, in the afternoon, they have a group session where they will have to reflect on what was the day like, what were the challenges that they've experienced during the day, and how these challenges can be overcome. On what are the typical day for parolees over the weekend? On Saturday, residents take a walk to the beach for therapeutic session. And on Sunday, residents normally attend church, but weekends are normally regarded as free days for parolees. So those who are given free pass, they could apply to go and visit their families, and the realistic management will liaise with the community corrections offices to ensure that those offenders or parolees, they are being monitored now at their families, not at the house, because they are not there for that particular weekend. What are some of the programs provided to parolees in the house? Amongst others, yoga, life skills, restorative justice program, training on manual work to teach them discipline, and also therapeutic program. And what are some of the challenges experienced by residents of the house? The fear of family not accepting them back, the fear of family not trusting them, the fear of relapsing back into crime and drugs, and also the issue of taking instructions from house parents. Challenges experienced by house parents, those that are taking care of the parolees on a day-to-day. Some of the challenges that they indicated, it's the behavior of parolees in general, the resistance from parolees to take instructions, and parolees who want to test their authority, parolees who want to manipulate the system. And how are these challenges being addressed? There is a constant interaction between realistic management and house parents to talk about these challenges and find ways of addressing them. Also, house parents are also provided with training to address some of these challenges. The findings of the second case study, which is Beauty for Ashes. This house is situated in Observatory and it was established in 2003 by Stephanie van Veek. The house can accommodate 5 residents, but there were 7 parolees at the time of the study. The house accommodates female parolees only. Since its establishment, a total of 67 parolees have successfully passed through the house, and most of which have not returned to crime. A resident normally spends a period of 12 months at the house. 3 of the women work part-time, while one is employed full-time as a receptionist. The Department of Correctional Services only started contributing the stipend in the past 2 years for this particular house. The typical day for parolees during the week, also in this house there's a roster system. Residents clean the house, especially those who are not employed. Others go to work, or others go to attend computer classes and or group sessions. Typical day for parolees over the weekend. Saturday is normally free time, while Sunday is a day dedicated for church. In contrast to realistic halfway house, Beautiful Ashes allows children of residents to come visit them over the weekend. And what are some of the programs provided to parolees in the house? Personal health growth program, diversity program, alcohol anonymous programs, computer courses, and individual courses depending on their qualifications, such as ABET. And what are some of the challenges experienced by residents of the house? Among them include getting along with the house parents, accepting authority of the house parents, and not being able to conform to restrictions. challenges experienced by house parents themselves, the issue of working 24 hours before, because they have to be at the house 24 hours, the issue of setting out own boundaries, that is not getting involved when they should not be involved, taking things personally when comments are made by parolees, and parolees coming back late in the evening smelling alcohol. And how are these challenges addressed? Beautiful Ashes encourage house parents not to involve themselves too much in conflict situation of parolees. They also need to keep themselves separate but also in charge. There's a regular training provided to house parents on managing conflict, and house parents are also have their own supervisor who assists them with their stress and debrief them when there's an incident. What are the general recommendations that I've made? Key among this is that more research should be conducted specifically on recidivism rate among those reintegrated through halfway houses. Residents that leave the facility should be tracked down and data collected systematically on how many of them are successful with their lives and how many of them reoffend. I think also the Department of Correctional Services should prioritize the establishment of halfway houses in all management areas to facilitate the smooth reintegration of offenders into the community. The department should stick to a system that pays a stipend per resident, like the situation with the current PPP correctional facilities, where they pay per offender per correctional facility. I think this will also allow for consistency, efficiency, and accountability. Also, the community should be informed about the need and role of halfway houses. I'll just end there with the first presentation, Chair. It's the last one, Chair. I've got only 2 years. Okay.
We are making notes of things that we want to raise later.
This is just only a few slides, Chair. I'll just go through quickly with the slides. I think while waiting for this technology, The second research that I've conducted was on challenges experienced by NGOs and FBOs in providing rehabilitation programs in correctional centers in the Western Cape.
I guess you didn't work alone on the project. Is that correct?
I've worked alone, sir.
You worked alone? Zakele, were you not part of it? Were you not part of it?
No, I was not part of it.
Oh, okay. No problem.
This is a separate one than the one that we wanted to do.
Oh, I see. Okay. No, I just wanted to say that when you work with other people, you acknowledge them.
Okay.
So at this time, there's no need to acknowledge anyone.
Thanks, Chair. This presentation talks to challenges experienced by NGOs and FBOs in providing rehabilitation programs in correctional facilities. I guess members have got slides because we don't want to waste time on technology. We'll just go through the slides that members have. It's only 10 slides. The purpose of the presentation also is to share with the, on the second slide, to share with the committee the findings of the study on challenges faced by NGOs and FBOs in providing rehabilitation programs in correctional centers in the Western Cape. The presentation will firstly provide the methodology used for the study, legislative and policy framework and rehabilitation, general findings and recommendation. The aim of the and objective of the study, Chair, among others, was to look at some of the challenges experienced by NGOs and FBOs while rendering rehabilitation programs in correctional facilities in the Western Cape. How often are these challenges experienced? And is management of the center aware about the challenges, and how can these challenges be addressed? An empirical study has been conducted in the form of interviews with identified organizations rendering rehabilitation programs in correctional facilities in the Western Cape. Semi-structured in-depth interviews were used as a method of data collection. Interviews were conducted with people who facilitate programs in correctional facilities on behalf of their organizations. Four organizations were interviewed in the study: Manigangi, Kingi, Songe Gender Justice, Center for Christian Spirituality, and Institute for Healing of Memories. The study was only limited, on slide 5, the study was only limited to organizations rendering rehabilitation programs in correctional centers in the Western Cape. Let's look at legislative and policy framework, page 6, slide 6. United Nations Standard Minimum Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners, Rule 61, states that community agencies should be enlisted wherever possible to assist the staff of the institution in the task of social rehabilitation of prisoners. If you look at Correctional Services Act, 111 of 1998, section 16.1 states that the department must provide development and support services even when not required to do so by this act. Section 16, subsection 2, further states that in all instances when the department does not provide such services, the commissioner must inform prisoners of the services available from other sources and put prisoners who request such services in touch with the appropriate agencies. White paper on corrections. The white paper acknowledges that no correctional system can achieve its objective if it does not have a range of healthy external partnerships. The relationship between DCS and the community organization and faith-based organization is inherent to the successful achievement of rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. What are the some of the findings for this study? Summary of general challenges identified. Offenders are sometimes not, because when these organizations go to correctional facilities to render a rehabilitation program, some of the challenges that they experience, for instance, on the day, is that offenders are not sometimes not released from their sections when service providers arrive at the center to render programs. And reasons for not availing offenders vary from one organization to the other, or from one correctional center to the other. I think the other issue, Honorable Self, is the issue of space to run programs for offenders, which is a key challenge faced by many of these organizations. And we understand that also DCS, it's constrained when coming to space. Sometimes organizations do not have dedicated space for programs in the particular center. The issue of appropriate furniture is also a challenge. Sometimes some of the venues do not have chairs, which necessitate some organizations to bring their own chairs. The issue of noise is another challenge, Honorable Bongo, because different organizations run different programs. For instance, you'll find that this organization is running church programs, and they have to sing and do this. And in the other venue, the other organization is therapeutic session where they need silence and all this. So there's that particular conflict. So it becomes challenging for organizations to run the programs in that particular center because of noise and other challenges. Schedule time for programs is another challenge. Sometimes there's no standard time when the program will start because of changes in present programs for that particular day. Only two slides left, Chairperson, I'm almost done. Scheduling of prison activities also has a negative effect on offenders participating in programs. For instance, if for that specific day, Chairperson, an offender has a visitor or it's a shopping day in that center, then an offender will have, it means an offender is going to miss the session, because it's either the offender will have to prioritize his visitors, or will offender will have to prioritize going to do because shopping is it's allowed for that day. So it becomes a challenge, the issue of scheduling of present activities. I think also the key is the issue of communication from center management is sometimes poor. For instance, when there are new regulations, the program facilitators will only find out on that specific day when they arrive at the center that there's new rules and regulations, which are things that they could have been informed well in advance. Then they would have made other alternative arrangement. So they are not informed in advance. The issue of understaffing is a challenge because relationship has been built with program coordinators in correctional facilities in a specific center. Therefore, if the coordinator is off sick for that specific day, then there's no one to assist with logistics and other things. In other instances, HIV/AIDS coordinators are the ones coordinating all programs, including those which are not even HIV/AIDS related or even health related. Therefore, there are vacancies for program coordinators. Sometimes officials make, the other issue that they've been identified is that sometimes officials will make negative comments to offenders who are attending programs. So that in itself, Chair, it affects in a negative way the spirit and motivation for offenders participating in that particular program. Now, how often are these challenges experienced? Some challenges are unique to certain organizations, while others are common, are more common to others. Therefore, the frequency of the challenges will depend on the nature of the challenge identified. Is management aware of these challenges? All organizations interviewed indicated that they have raised these challenges that they experience with the heads of correctional centers where they run their programs. Therefore, it means the management in those centers, specific centers, is aware of those challenges that have been identified. And how can these challenges be addressed? In most challenges identified, the issue of communication, which is central. Communication is vital in addressing most of these challenges. So it is important that management of the center, as well as coordinators, communicate with organizations in their centers about changes which might affect their programs for that specific day well in advance, so that program facilitators can make alternative arrangement. This is the last slide. General recommendations. DCS, and in particular management at individual centers, should improve on their communications with NGOs and FBOs attached to those specific centers. And management of centers should also engage with all organizations in their center to arrange a timetable for different programs in that particular center. And also the white paper on corrections states that rehabilitation should be at the center of departmental activities. Honorable Bongo, this means rehabilitation of offenders should take priority over other prison activities which are not that important. And the Department of Correctional Services should be encouraged to fill vacancies in order to address understaffing in correctional centers. And the management of the center should identify and train other officials who could assist with coordination of prison programs, so that when the designated official is off sick for that specific day, someone who's knowledgeable about the program could be able to assist the NGO facilitator on that specific day. Thank you so much, Chairperson and members. Thanks.
Why do you isolate the adults in this meeting and only address young people? Okay. Dr. do you or any of your team wants to comment on the report?
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to your honorable members. The general findings that the researcher is mentioning are some of the challenges that we are aware of, and it's not something that has been thumbs up. And I think it would be proper that maybe the CDC Incarceration and Corrections to comment on these challenges and the findings in particular, because I think, Chairperson, the findings are for us very material and impact on our work. So I'm here with the CDC as well as the acting CDC Community Corrections, who should then comment on those that have been put in halfway houses or even in our community corrections. I'm very much taken by the second and the last presentation that talks to what are operations and challenges that are being experienced in providing rehabilitation programs, and the issues that sort of stifle the contribution by NGOs and FBOs in our environment. I'm finding quite a lot of value in this. But as I say, Chairperson, the CDC Incarceration and Corrections and the acting for halfway houses should comment, and then we can give a last bite on it, and then the committee can, as it sees fit, to maybe conclude on what are the findings and recommendations. Thank you, sir.
And Tema Tavat, whether the comments are positive or negative, that will not detract from the fact that we have done a very good work, very professional, well structured, and well presented. And we thank you very much. Okay.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. My name is Felison Pandaba. I would like to comment on the halfway houses. And I think as a department, looking at this report, we agree with the findings that what is reflected in the report is it is exactly what is happening in our halfway houses. And unfortunately, the realistic halfway house that we had, I think it could not continue for this financial year due to procurement processes and that they could not meet. So we do not have that halfway house, but we are working on assisting them because they provided a very good work. We are working towards assisting them to meet the required standards. But looking at the challenges that have been that are cited here, in terms of the stipend, yes, we are working on that, and that is in consultation with our CFO and the Office of the Finance, and our heads of COMCO and the area commissioner management. They, from time to time, they do engage with the heads of the halfway houses to ensure, or the service providers, to ensure that we address those challenges, because really, the reason. One major reason why they are not accepted by their families, it's because of this relationship problems. So one major thing that we have to work on is the reconstruction of those relationships. And we do emphasize that the weekend as the free, it's always a free, it's their free time. We encourage them to go to the families and to work on the relationships, with the intention of releasing them back completely out of the halfway house. But thank you very much. I think the report, we are welcoming it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that is Wilbur.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson and honourable members. Chairperson, I firstly want to welcome the research by the researcher, and one will also need to receive it also so that we can do it in more in depth, because one was just listening. And Chairperson, on face value, there are some of the findings that we are aware of, which is always on our radar screen in the attempt to address them. Chairperson, I think we need also to always remember that there are so many competing activities at a correctional facility that when we are doing the presentation on the number of NGOs and stakeholders and partnerships that we do have, one will have a more clear picture to understand that, you know, at one facility there are so many things that are happening. And and the committee will know from their visits that a correctional facility is not the ideal place where things are always running, you know, as, I don't want to say as a school, but from 8 to 9, 9 to 10. There are always surprises. But, Chairperson, I think one wants really to appreciate and not necessarily generalize the findings as to each and every correctional facility, because you have your urban and other facilities where the challenges are not the same, but I think we will appreciate that, and we will request that we engage further with the researchers so that we can see how can we address especially the issue of communication, and to have also this understanding, Chairperson, what are the people saying to a third party of us as correctional facilities. I think that is very helpful. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. And thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. I think the findings are mostly spot on, especially with regard to the last presentation that talks to scheduling and communication, and indeed, it also again gives us an opportunity to look at what informs our operations at centre level. What can we do to assist and ensure that there's efficiency and effectiveness? I'm taking note of it, and especially the issues that are raised by the researcher: vacancies, communication, and scheduling of the interventions. One can only say that there are times when our facilities are overwhelmed by NGOs and FBOs, and therefore scheduling is critical, so that you don't have at a particular time a number of NGOs and FBOs that are coming to do programs. The Halfway House presentation, Chair, much as it is our intention to utilize it for successful integration, with the budgetary challenges that we have, it is going to become an unsustainable project. But a project that provides us with an opportunity of ensuring successful reintegration. And as the researcher has indicated, that those that have been in that project have not re-offended again. So it must give us then the confidence to say, maybe let's approach differently, so as to be able to fund the halfway houses. It is still our intention to go back to National Treasury with our situation, Chairperson, where we're going to indicate how impossible it becomes for us to have a budget that gets cut at particular times, and us being expected to still render a service to those that the state has put in our care to look after, but also to rehabilitate. So Chair, that is a topic for maybe another day that we would like also the committee to take note of. But indeed, the presentations are very factual, and their findings and recommendations the department can only benefit from. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm still personally just
a little bit worried about the philosophy behind this concept. I know it comes from a white paper, but you see what you are sketching out here, I would say is something that is happening at a small scale. I think for the reasons that the commissioner is saying, budgetary constraints, but even the fact that one has been closed. But I'm just wondering whether this is a responsibility that must be funded by correctional services, given the challenges that they have already have. You have a Department of Social Development. What are they doing? Because that should be something that they fund. But also, you use individuals, realistic management. What skills do they have as that body to look after parolees? You have Mr. Stefan van Wyk. I guess he's an individual or a family. What skills do they have? Shouldn't we be re-looking at who must establish and run these halfway houses? Shouldn't they be a community project where, for instance, you have a board consisting of people that have different skills? And shouldn't you be using volunteers, professionals, and making this project societal issues rather than businesses for individuals? And also, government has farms that are lying there not utilized. Shouldn't we get these farms and establish these things on the farms where you can establish different projects on those farms, and in that way you can even create permanent jobs for those parolees? Because if you say they are re-entering, they went through the house, went back to the community, how are you sure that they are back into the community to settle? And if they settle, what do they do? You will think that they are not committing crime because you have not yet caught them. So I was just thinking, Commissioner, that maybe we need to rethink the concept itself and see how can we structure it better. Because if you take people that came from the township, you say you have rehabilitated them, you send them back into the same townships where the same socioeconomic conditions exist, what guarantee do we have that they will repent? Why don't we put them on state farms and get more departments involved to create jobs? But in short, I don't agree that we should expect the department to find the resources from Treasury for this work. There are funds elsewhere in other departments that should be coming on board. But you also have service providers. Maybe we should, as government, say that people that are providing services to the state, they must also have a social responsibility program. They make a lot of money, millions. They must plow back into the projects of government like this. But as you say, maybe that is for another day. But I just think we proposed before Mr. Smallberger, when the National Commission, that maybe we should have a workshop and just deal with this. I think this report can help us to move forward. Honourable members, Honourable Self.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, and thank you, St. Paul, for the presentation, which I think was very interesting. I would support the idea of a workshop if the workshop deals with reintegration more broadly, because I don't think there's a single strategy or a single aspect that's the answer to everything, and it must of necessity be integrated. So I just wanted to ask, and maybe the department knows, who decides who gets to go to a halfway house? Because there are 36 of them, as far as I could work out, that the department is running when it was running them,
at a cost of about 9 million rand. So obviously there's criteria that people without addresses and so on and so forth, but I mean this is a very enriched environment in which you're sending somebody back into the community through a halfway house. I don't imagine that they can accommodate more than a couple of hundred people who are being released onto parole. So who are the lucky ones and who are the unlucky ones, and what are the criteria that are used? And then following on your comment, Chair, about the cost benefits of these facilities, if you are spending that amount of money, aren't there easier, cheaper ways of keeping tabs on people who've been released, parolees and probationers, that are more cost effective? And in this respect, I was just looking at the other presentation that you're about to make around the worrying limited number of tagging devices there are, and the number of tagging devices that have been destroyed or damaged or can't be used any longer, because it would seem to me that you can get the same broad benefit at a fraction of the cost by simply keeping tabs on people for where they're going. And then finally, just in terms of the reoffending rate, I mean, Paul's research says that at one of these houses there hasn't been any reoffending. Well, that's at one of the houses, and as we all know, reoffending research is still in its infancy, because you don't know whether the person's going to reoffend after 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, or whatever the case might be. But if you are pushing a lot of resources into this sort of venture, then I would have thought you needed to be pretty certain that you're getting bang for your buck and that people were not, in fact, going to reoffend. But I don't know whether we have any research that substantiates that it is they're less reoffending if the person goes through a halfway house or more. Thank you.
I agree with you, Mr. Sell, that if a workshop should be broader, not just on halfway houses. Honorable Matthias.
Thank you so much.
Look, the concept of the halfway houses is quite an interesting concept. I think it breaks the, or rather, it's a breaking ground for innovative methods of ex-convicts reintegration into communities. But it must also be reminded that offenders generally, especially those who are from poor backgrounds, are victims of social or societal neglect, whether socially or economically. And until such time that we as Parliament do something about such social neglect, measures such as halfway houses or even traditional straight parole system will just do so little to address the problem of criminality and inclination to commit crime. So society has got to do something about the neglect that imposes on the offenders. Look, I would have got some few questions. One is, what is the research study, if you do have one, on the success rate between ex-convicts who are released into the community on traditional straight parole system versus the halfway houses? If you do have such a statistics, can you please share with us? And secondly, how does the department measure the success of the halfway houses, since they are funded through taxpayers' money? How does halfway houses, how are they made to be accountable for the quality of and the outcome of service they provide? Is there any service level agreement with them? This has got to do with what Honorable Selves has raised, the cost-benefit analysis. But then lastly, the point that he made about who are those that are so lucky to be placed on halfway houses, and who are those who are not, on the basis of what is the selection done? Is it done on appearance? The uglier you are, like myself, you not get the benefit. The handsome you are, like Honorable Horn, you get the benefit of being placed in the halfway houses. What is the criteria? It's on appearance. It's on looks. Can we please be Bofadel? I was once your client there in Ramkral in the Free State. Bofadel, can you please help us to understand the selection criteria? Thank you.
In future, you must sit in front. You see this front row, always want to use as a point of reference. So you must join them in front.
I feel like a piece of meat, Jim.
Honorable Bongo.
No, thanks, Chair. I think my first question flows from what Honorable Self has asked. I think it's about where, from a legislative point of view, where do we draw the people? How do we get the people to the halfway houses? Where in the white paper or in the legislation? But also to thank Mpoma Tabata for the presentation. I think it's quite well researched, and it does assist. I think, Commissioner, it may assist some of the issues raised there. We may have to develop a dashboard against which we will have to look at the progressive implementation of some of the issues raised. Now, I want to know what is it that we can do around the issue of understaffing. Understaffing. But I think I agree with you, Chair, because one very critical matter that we have is these people go to the halfway houses. We've been grappling with the point of they are also employability, because we will be multiplying our own efforts by zero if we will try to rehabilitate, do all sorts of things, get to halfway house, but afterwards when they are there or when they get back home, they still have a problem of being employed, and the whole issue of having their names and or IDs saying that you have a criminal record. So we need a progressive way of trying to deal with that matter, either at the white paper level or a legislative framework which will categorize these people differently so that they can be absorbed into the system, the bigger system. But an important point that the chairperson is raising is that we have a lot of farms. We have a lot of farms, and I know now also the Department of Defense is coming up with a concept which says the food nutrition program for all the soldiers must be done in collaboration with either communities and so on. So I'm also suggesting that if we're to use those who are in the halfway farms, halfway houses, to participate in this, because we have a lot of farms where we can take these people to can do a lot of work in terms of producing tomatoes and so on, and use these things for both the corrections and departments like Department of Defense. So we have to look at those collaborations. Otherwise we may be going 10 steps forward and 11 backwards. But I think the concept, it's a good concept. We really need to enhance this concept. It needs to be enhanced and see what we can do, because if we're to respond to the outcome in terms of the National Development Plan, I think I'll stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I would like to inquire from Mr. Matabata if in conducting this research with those four organizations, did you sometimes inquire from them if they do make use of previous offenders, like who are now rehabilitated, to show that this rehabilitation program is bearing fruit, like Unati, the guy who sings Nomvula One. I know Honorable Breitenbach loved the song so much. and Solumuholo, you know, as a sort of mentors. So did you sometimes in your interviews with these four NGOs, did you make mention of such? And again, the Imbadu, pardon my pronunciation because I don't come from this side, Imbadu, am I right? Imbadu project, which deals with the issues around men and masculinity. I saw it somewhere here in your presentation. So it is said that the said project got a 2 years contract from DCS to run the same project. And then what is it involved with? May you share light with us. And my other concern, maybe it may relate to the department, is the allocation to this very important program, rehabilitation, really is too little, because it's less than 5%. Thank you, Chair.
Is there another hand? I want to take all the hands so that they can cover.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation on both NGOs and the halfway stations. With the halfway stations, indeed, I support the idea that there should be some kind of criteria set out for establishment of these halfway houses. The chairperson has actually indicated that maybe you need to look at the situation where you decide on the status of an organization that qualifies to open up a halfway house. And it's about also protection of the parolees, so that you don't actually end up sending them into something that's going to make them worse. And also I would be interested in terms of the grant system as to what is actually being provided monetarily by the department before I can actually also make a judgment as to whether this could be viable or not, because I guess if this is a service that the department is finding very important, then it would actually have to be, the financing of it would have to be looked at so that we actually agree as to what type of financing might be appropriate to actually manage to run these halfway houses. successfully. When you indicated the numbers, it's like does Northwest have halfway houses? Looks like it doesn't. I would like to know why it's not a concept that's rolled out in all the provinces. And then Gauteng, I saw 8, but I'm thinking that Gauteng has got more correctional centers than any other province. Is the process of rolling out equitable in terms of the population of inmates and maybe in the form of parolees also, and people who've been inmates that have been released from centers. When it comes to the NGOs also, I think the same principle applies of the criteria who you're bringing in that is actually helping them to manage to respond to the rehabilitation program, and also the value of what they are bringing in and how the processes are coordinated and whether these processes are actually responding to the needs of the inmates. And that should actually also look at what correctional centers themselves are providing in the form of rehabilitation, so that whatever NGOs come in build on what has already been developed by correctional centers, so that their visits to correctional centers actually provide some kind of value. In a number of meetings, especially from the side of the chairperson, he has actually indicated, why not use also MRM, Moral Regeneration Movement, as a partner across the board in all correctional centers, so that there comes a time maybe when we could actually see a situation where you've got some kind of a memorandum of understanding with Moral Regeneration Movement, so that as we continue with the rehabilitation program, we are sure that when it comes to the whole issue of moral regeneration, by the time our inmates leave the facilities, that has been properly addressed. And also maybe to see to what extent you could utilize the charter of values, almost like a Bible for the inmates whilst they are still incarcerated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Dr. Matavata, I don't want to answer you, and because you may feel like you are part of the department, you are far from it.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. I think the comments and questions are spot on. When the department, Chairperson, embarked on the halfway house concept, we had done also our own sort of research, which was largely based in Gauteng, where we found that there were already halfway houses in both Pretoria, Tshwane, and Johannesburg, which were run by NGOs and being funded through DSD, Department of Social Development. And when we were trying to align ours with that, we then were very much cautious that we're starting this project, and we therefore have to make sure that, because these people are still in our care, that they are not utilized for any other purpose than the purpose of rehabilitation, purpose of being reintegrated with their families. And therefore, in the beginning, it was fundamental that we indicate what is it that we expect from the halfway houses. And then having to go it solo was actually to ensure that we are able to deliver on what we thought at that time was our efforts to reintegrate. We had actually benchmarked with the halfway house in Orlando as to the layout of the building itself and also the operations. But when it came to funding, the department then thought otherwise, to say, maybe let's start this and ensure that it is rolled out in all of the provinces, and then being taken over by communities
because it is not sustainable that the state should be paying for the operation of halfway houses. So we came up with a criteria that I think CDC Smallberger can explain to, but also what was important was in the service level agreement we indicated that this is what we expect. Programs must run, there should be a structured day program, and that they must be at the end of their sentence before they are being given parole, and importantly as well the criteria that they should have been incarcerated for long periods of time where they are not able to locate their families. And the purpose actually was, how do we bring them together with the families, sending our officials as well as the NPOs to find out where family members are. I think, Chairperson, that was initially what we wanted to do with the other projects that were then there as well. For instance, the mother and child in Beleko and the sanitary pads project. So I'm just giving that background so that members should also have the comfort of knowing how we came about this intervention. And Chairperson, I would really want to plead with the committee that maybe let's take the research and its findings, and the department be given an opportunity of responding meaningfully to what are the findings and as well as the recommendations, and our ability to then put that in place. Because I think some of them, and as the Member of Parliament correctly says, we might have put measures in place that were not effective enough. So some sort of a dashboard or a to-do list can assist us in bringing about some respectability to the manner in which we operate at correctional center level. I think that would assist us. And then from my point, Chairperson, where I'm seated, the halfway house came when I was CDC Corrections, and this is sort of a product of one's efforts, and it might be that one would be more defensive than being open for criticism, so that we are able to see what value add this research has and how it can be implemented. So I'm really requesting that we be given that opportunity. And then also the cost benefit, indeed, it is not sustainable. We can't be operating another facility outside of existing facilities. And therefore, our interaction with community structures, community organizations for their funding is going to be very critical. When we started Naturena, there was also another one that we wanted to start, where we wanted to put female offenders in. The challenge there was that this person wanted these females to work in a factory and therefore increase production. And what we said was, if that is going to be the case, then you have to pay them some sort of a stipend. And we could not find one another there. So we want to take the offenders and utilize them free of charge, whereas that is not the purpose of us having handed over these offenders to that. So there are some challenges that as a department we have to deal with, but we need also to put in some our own checks and balances and ensure that no abuse of the offenders takes place. Chairperson, the concern that is raised by Honorable Matthias and as well as Honorable Self with regard to the workshop, I think it should be a priority, CDC Smallberger, that looking at our ability and our financial muscle, that we as soon as is possible have this interaction. But the study that was done or the research should then form part of the program that it could be introducing the topic to those that would be attending the workshop or the whatever you may call it, the colloquium or a roundtable discussion. And we need as a department then to prioritize that so that we don't lose the value of this research. Chairperson,
Indeed, it would be important that in that workshop, we also indicate how many numbers have we put in the halfway houses, and what is our success. Those that have been sent there who have committed crime and who have not committed crime, and compare that to the resources that we allocated to the halfway houses. Chairperson, maybe just on the issue of structure, especially where we are talking of resourcing in terms of officials, and I want to separate that from real vacancies to creating positions. The department is at a very advanced stage, Chairperson, and I think the committee is fully aware that we have looked into the organizational structure of the Department of Correctional Services so as to enable us to do our work, and we are very much advanced. It is at the executive level, and then once it has passed that stage, it shall be brought to the committee and to labor, so that the committee takes note of what is it that we want to put in place in terms of the organization of the department, and also looking at how best we can utilize our staff. Indeed, members of the committee and chairperson, correctional services has to ensure that programs that are being rendered to offenders do have value. Programs are part of the rehabilitation regime that should take place at the correctional facility. And that's why maybe CDC Smallberg will come later to also indicate that we have accreditation committees that looks at NGO X who wants to come in. This is what I want to come and do in a facility, and how do I then take it forward, and what would be the value. Otherwise, we'll just have an going in and out of correctional facilities. I think, Chairperson, from my side, I would like to stop there. And if there are any other areas that I did not comment on, that colleagues also assist. But I think we'll only do justice to the work that was done by the researcher once the department comes with its own response as to, indeed, this is what is factual, this is what needs to be looked into, and how do we go about it, and respond to all of the questions that members have put to us, like criteria, cost-benefit analysis, and so forth. Chairperson, thank you very much.
No, thanks, Ntatemuthi. I think your response is very useful, that we have received the report, and then you will interact it with it and see how we can take that forward. But what I wanted the honourable members to assist here is, isn't it advisable that because the report was commissioned by ourselves, and then we don't put an additional responsibility on the department, we ourselves organize the colloquium or workshop, and then the report will serve, the report together with the response by the department will serve as a basis for moving forward, so that we don't go and overstretch their already overstretched resources. What are the members saying? Honorable Majak?
We are in support of the suggestion, Chairperson.
Several time frames, January. We organize towards the end of January, so that when we go back to Parliament, we are clear. We don't go and lament like we have been lamenting for the past 10 years. Honorable Horn, are you happy? Okay, thanks very much.
Can we move on to... Honourable member.
members, we shall now receive the presentation of the media performance report. I hope we didn't eat all your time. You'll be able to manage, and we open the floor to you, Dr. Moody. Dr. Matabat, thank you very much. You won't be unemployed in the near future. You created a job for yourself.
Against predetermined objectives as at the midpoint for 2016-17 financial year. I'm speaking to the presentation that is titled Presentation on Mid-Year DCS Performance 2016-17. It is a 67-slide presentation. In summary, if we go to slide one, at the halfway point for 2016-17, we have achieved 62% of the targets that we set for ourselves for the current financial year. We have a total of 34, and we have achieved 21 of those, and 13 not achieved. The six are monitored on an annual basis. So my approach to the presentation will just to be to give a summary per program at a higher level. So if we go to slide three, which is for program one administration, of the 10 targets that we're tracking, we have achieved five and not achieved five as well, so we're at a level of 50%. Under the sub-program management, we have registered successes in terms of the rollout of the communication strategy. But in the under the same sub-program, three of the indicators, which is the rollout of the perception survey, which has been delayed due to the report not coming out of GCS, but that will be expected in November thereabouts. Also under that program, the percentage of officials charged and found guilty of corrupt activities, there were 16 cases, of which 14 were successful. So whilst we haven't achieved, but we are doing very well in terms of success rate. And then the other area where there was a challenge was that 13 out of the 18 legal cases that we finalized were in the department's favor, and five went in the favor of the plaintiffs. So once again, we haven't achieved on that, but in terms of progress, we are well over 50% with regards to achieving that target. Under corporate services, the two indicators achieved were around the training of personnel in line with the workspace, the workplace skills program, where we are about, we have trained in the region about 16,000 officials against the target of 10. The other area of success was the integrated health wellness program, which has been rolled out to seven management areas, whereas we had targeted to have reached three in the interim. So there is good progress there. Under the IT section, the rollout of the integrated inmate management system, the component of the inmate registration and admissions has been completed and is currently being tested. And as we indicated in our last presentation, that the committee will be privy to that in their oversight visit. The challenge under the IT section is the rollout of the LAN infrastructure, where budgeting constraints have restricted us to rolling that out to only 27 centres in the current financial year. But a view will be taken in the upcoming financial years as to whether that can be speeded up. In terms of the automation of the performance information indicators, We are slightly behind on that in terms of finalizing the spec on the alignment between BAS and the reporting system, but that is going to be sorted out during the current quarter. The Judicial Inspectorate had set a target of 41 inspections on 41 centres, which they have achieved, so they are on target in that regard. So, in summary, as I said, under administration, we have achieved 50% of those targets. If I take you to Program 2, which is on slide 15, here also we are at an achievement rate of 50% of the target set. So under sub-program security operations, we are registering successes in terms of the unnatural deaths, where we are under the target of 26, it was restricted to 23, that being mainly due to the suicide risk profiling that is conducted. The challenges still remain escapes and assaults, but those are also linked to the indicator on overcrowding, which we have discussed at length. Under the sub-program facilities, the target that we are measuring on an annual basis is the increase in bed spaces due to both construction of new facilities and the upgrading. Work on the upgrading is currently underway on the escort and standards and facilities, and delivery is expected to be on time in that regard. Under remand detention, the indicator there is on the continuous risk assessment of the remand detention facilities. That has been finalized in 35 facilities, so we are slightly ahead of schedule in that regard. And under offender management, the offenders' profiles that are considered by parole boards is sitting at 92% against the target of 89%. The success rate there being mainly due to the contracts of the parole board members being extended. The challenges on overcrowding is that we are now sitting at 35% against the target of 32%, but we continue to roll out the multi-pronged strategy, and we envisage to get improved results as we proceed. If I move on to Program 3, which is rehabilitation, and I'll take you to slide 24. We're sitting at 75%, which is the 6 indicators achieved out of the total of 8. So we've registered successes in the area of rolling out of correctional programs, skills training, TVET college programs, and FET programs. Also, under the psychological and spiritual services, we are performing ahead of target. The challenge being around the social work services, and that being mainly predicated on the vacancies on social workers, but that is also being addressed in the process of advertising those positions, and the Free State, Northern Cape more especially, are putting more effort on that recruitment process. Under Program 4, which is care, and that is slide 34. There's a total of 4 indicators, of which all have been achieved, in the areas of inmates who are on antiretroviral therapy. We are at 98%. The TB cure rate, we're at 86%. And inmates tested for HIV is sitting at 66%, which is all above target. And also the management of therapeutic diets is also registering successes. Under Program 5, Social Reintegration, which is slide 38, we are also on 50% there. In terms of our medium-term strategic framework indicators, around parolees and probationers without violations, we are on 96%. And that is also linked to the fact that we have managed to roll out 127 service points versus a target of 12, so that assists in that regard. Victim offender mediation and dialogues still a challenge due to the reluctance of offenders to participate, but that is being addressed by increased marketing of the program. And the other one on the reintegration of probationers through halfway houses, I think we've had a detailed discussion around that. And that, from the performance information point of view, is our input, and then we'll engage if there are any questions in that regard.
Thank you. I'm going to take through the committee on the finance presentation, which starts on slide 45. On slide 45, for the first 6 months, we have spent 50.95% of the annual budget. The spending for the first 6 months was 50.95% against a spending plan of 49.30%, which resulted in 357 million overspending on the spending plan. There is also a projection of 897 million of possible overspending on various items, which I'll deal with in the next slide. On slide 47, the table indicates what I've just indicated per program, that all five programs are overspending in the first half of the year due to various reasons that I will touch on as I go along. However, just to note that the biggest program, being incarceration, is the one with higher pressures on municipal charges, as we've indicated also in the first quarter. In the first half of the year, it overspent by 207 million on the spending plan, mainly on goods and services. Moving on to slide 49, which then deals with per program. The program administration, the actual spending in the first 6 months was 1.9 billion, which is 50.74% against a spending plan of 1.9, where it overspent by 42 million rand. The pressures on that program are mainly are not on compensation, because we've been underspending there because of vacancies. But if you look at goods and services, in that program, there's pressures as a result of fleet services due to high expenditures on fuel and vehicle repairs, and slow clearance of internal charges on items related to farming supplies. The other pressures are on transfers and subsidies, which is mainly the leave gratuity as a result of exits or retirements and designations. The next program on page 51 is the bigger program, which comprises of security operations, facilities, remand detention, and offender management. On this program, the overspending, as I indicated, was the highest in the first 6 months of 207 million. The pressures on compensation of employees, there's underspending because of vacancies amounting to 8.51%, and that underspending amounts to 113 million. Whereas on goods and services, the spending plan, as indicated, is indicating that we're overspending by 291 million on capital works for municipal services, where in the first quarter we also indicated that we had paid in this financial year 193 million worth of invoices emanating from the previous financial year. Still, those pressures will also be there for the rest of the financial year, where we are projecting 588 million of expenditure on that item, on water and electricity consumption. With respect to the other pressure, it's also on payment of capital assets. on buildings and other fixtures, fixed structures, where we also had to pay invoices from the previous financial year in relation to claims by or payments to DPW, and that program is overspending by 52 million. On program three, rehabilitation, which has three sub-program, correctional programs, offender development and psychological, social work and spiritual services, with an achievement rate of 75% from a performance point of view. The program spent 48.86% of its budget compared to the spending plan of 47.84, resulting in overspending of 12 million in the first 6 months of the financial year. The pressures on this program, it's mainly on compensation of employees because of performance bonuses which were relating to the previous year of 14-15, as well as periodic payments on professionals and such as psychologists and social work services. There is no pressures on goods and services on this program. However, on payment of capital, there is an underspending in this program of 15 million. And due to pressures on the entire vote, most of this capital equipment in relation to production workshops will not be bought because we had to suspend part of our procurement plan because of pressures on other items. So most of these items have been suspended to avoid overspending on the vote itself. Although there are also successes in the sense that we've also been able to obtain funding from CETAS where they want to support or supplement funding on the production workshops. Program 4, with two programs, I'm on slide 56, on nutritional and healthcare and hygiene services. The program has spent 53.7% of its budget in the first 6 months against a spending plan of 50.42. The program has overspent by 65 million in total, but its pressures are mainly on goods and services. And in this regard, it's mainly on the nutritional services program, where we're indicating that the 63 million overspending was mainly on food and food supplies and agency and support outsource services. And this item, honorable members, to note that the CPI inflation on food as at August was standing at 13.4%, which is much higher than what is allowable in terms of our budgeting processes. So we receive less, but yet we've got pressures from an inflation point of view. Secondly, that there's also pressures on the Universal Test and Treat program when it eventually gets implemented, because we'll be required to treat all offenders, although we don't have supplementary budget in that regard, although discussions are still underway with the Department of Health. On Program 5 on page 58, this program has got supervision, and we've dealt with this morning mainly on supervision and community reintegration. This program spent 53.6% of its budget against a spending plan of 49.88, resulting in an overspending of just over 30 million rand. The pressures on these programs are also on compensation of employees as well as goods and services, mainly where we overspend on goods and services by 9 million was on electronic monitoring contract, which we also project that for the rest of the financial year, this item may overspend by 48.8 million. that brings us to the end of PEA program, but on slide 60, we just indicate PEA economic classification that compensation of employees due to vacancies, whereas each program is has got its own challenges on that item. At a vote level, we are underspending by 59 million. The pressures are mainly on goods and services, where we are overspending by 408 million. I wish to close my presentation on slide 64 to indicate what we are doing and what we plan to do in terms of reducing expenditure. We have implemented circulars in terms of cutting of costs, mainly on operations. Issues around events, we've slowed down on events and actually cut those. We've also implemented capping on official kilometer travel by members, including also on other operational matters, so that we slow down on fleet items such as fuel and so forth, and repairs and maintenance. We've implemented the video conferencing across the department. Management areas are linked to regional offices. Regional offices are also linked to head office, and the other way around, which has limited, has reduced travel and accommodation for engagements between those structures. We have, as committed last, as we have committed, we are in the process of finalizing the identification of mission critical positions, because we've frozen posts as we speak. There are no posts that have been filled, because we want to identify and finalize the mission-critical posts. For instance, heads of centers would be prioritized so that we are able to then have a cost-effective compensation budget. There's also a process where we're reviewing all our brand infrastructure over the medium term so that we are able to rake in perhaps some savings in that regard, because we have to supplement our vote is not increasing, and therefore we have to supplement, shift funds around between programs or economic items. On slide 65, we've stopped over the MTEF most of acquisitions of machinery and equipment, other than those that are critical towards projects such as IT. For instance, we are doing rolling out of cabling and IT infrastructure so that this connectivity between centers and systems are able to be deployed there from an IT point of view. So those we've not touched, but there are those that we're stopping to have some savings over the medium term. There is also our procurement approach. What we've done is we are exploring our term contracts on perishables and non-perishables for inmates, so that we are able to have efficiencies there. This process will bear fruit, obviously, in the next cycle, in the next financial year, because at the moment, all those contracts are already in place. Lastly, we also looking at consumables, which are quite significant amount and inventory items for inmates, where we are looking at reprioritizing those items so that we are able to absorb from different budget items. In addition to that, Chairperson, we've also exploring production of some of the items that inmates consume by investing more in the infrastructure for production workshop. That's in addition to the uniform and the shoes and the linen that they are currently doing, so that we are able to obtain those savings. Chairperson, that's the presentation in respect of the budget for the first 6 months. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lekege.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honorable members, with regard to performance information, mid-year achievement, what we have done was to also look at how we fared last financial year at this point, and it is recorded that we had the same 62% achievement. But last year was different in that at least our budgetary constraints were not as severe as the ones that we are experiencing this year, Chairperson. And one would want to make the committee aware of our ability to either achieve better than last year is getting diminished by the budgetary constraints that we have to effect as a department. And it is thus necessary that this team, and I, Minister Masuta and Deputy Minister Makwetla, where we planning to address the MINTEC, but also going further than that to the DEFCOM JCPS cluster and the MINCOM part to indicate what our situation is as a department, that the further cuts we experience, the more difficult it is going to be for us to achieve the targets that we have set for ourselves. However, those that do not necessarily have a monetary effect or financial effect, we are confident that we shall achieve come year end. And therefore, we are working very hard with our regions to ensure that our achievement is ensured at the end of the financial year. With regard to the mid-year expenditure report, Chairperson, indeed, that is what we have achieved, but also the concerns that the CFO is raising with us in terms of the cuts that are going to be affected, which are going to be more and more. But also, Chairperson, what we want to raise with yourselves and the members is the fact that with our intention to finally finalize the second phase OSD, our situation in terms of human resource is going to be affected greatly in the MTEF going forward. We will be providing to the committee and the chair the impact of the finalization of the second phase OSD, which has been a critical area that has caused that there are more and more complaints about correctional services not implementing the OSD as it was agreed 2009, that with effect from April 2010 that all departments should have moved their staff to the new remuneration levels, and any back pay should then have been done. I want to emphasize this point, Chairperson, that the cost containment measures that the National Treasury has introduced to all departments. In correctional services, we already started last year with our own containment measures, and that is why our expenditure situation looked better than it had been before. And the introduction of these ones that we have received this financial year has gone also a long way to make us aware of the economic climate that the department or our government is under. And therefore, Chairperson, as a department, we want to assure committee members that those critical projects in the department, we're still going to carry on. But I think there is going to be a general downscaling of some projects, so that we, with the budget that has been provided and allocated to correctional services, we are able to see the year through. We can only make the committee aware that going forward is going to be more difficult, and therefore it is going to be important that we provide that picture to yourselves, but provide it also, as I have said, to the executive, so that they can then consider our situation different than to this other one. There, as I've indicated the last time I was here, Chairperson, that apart from the other interventions that we want to put in place as a department with regard to rehabilitation, skilling, and providing education to offenders, there are these other ones that we are not able to touch on, and that is providing food, nutrition, security, healthcare services to inmates, also providing salaries to officials as we have a contractual obligation. But as the CFO has indicated, that we take a decision to fill the mission critical positions, especially heads of centers and social workers, psychologists, that we already have conducted interviews. But having in mind that it is going to be difficult as we approach the end of the financial year. So, Chairperson, I think this is the picture that we want the committee to have in its mind, so that the committee also assists us in creating the awareness that we would like it to be created in Parliament, and also the fact that we will strive to do our best all the time amidst the many challenges that we have of overcrowding, challenges of infrastructure that is dilapidated and decaying, but also, Chairperson, the issue of staffing. The allocation that we have for compensation, as much as we are trying to employ, there are also a number of officials who are leaving, who cite the insecurities that they're experiencing because of some of the things that have been said, that the pension fund is going to collapse or whatever, so people want to leave as they reach age 55. So we have a sort of a mass exodus of officials who are leaving correctional services, but I think it is also something that is happening throughout the government. But importantly as well, Chairperson, the drought that we have experienced and the also the escalation of food prices, we are in that situation that we have to grapple with and do everything in our power to keep to the allocation, but ensure that we still provide those services to offenders. Chairperson, I would like to pause there and allow members to, if there are questions of clarity, that we give you the opportunity.
Honourable staff, your long-awaited report.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Since Mr. Modise raised the issue of the OSD, it all happened a long time ago, but I seem to remember that there was a judgment from the Labour Appeal Court which made certain determinations about how the OSD matter should be dealt with. Is the department adhering to that judgment? Secondly, I looked very closely at the indicators, and there are some issues which I think are avoidable. I'm particularly disturbed by the fact that as overcrowding is one of the biggest single factors that the department has to grapple with, there was an item there under Program 2 Incarceration for 435 bed spaces to be created. It was unable to be achieved because of a late tender advertisement. Now, I mean, there's some things that are avoidable and there are other things that are unavoidable. It would seem to me that lateness is an avoidable one. But on to rehabilitation, the Program 3. And Mr. Modise will know that this is a bugbear of mine, and for many years, you can achieve targets by making the targets relatively modest. And when I look at the numbers of people who are actually participating in skills development, in education, in psychological services, and spiritual services, it is a fraction of the number of people that are actually incarcerated at any given time. The other thing is, of course, you say, for example, percentage of inmates who benefit from spiritual services per year. Well, what does that mean? You go to church once a year, once a week, once a month? In other words, the target is unspecific, and therefore the performance measurement is likewise a bit vague. So I think it's an endemic problem of the way in which these reports are presented, that there isn't enough specificity to know whether we're making progress against defined outcomes. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think something that must bother this committee is that when we received the performance report in respect of the first quarter, we were promised that in respect of certain problematic areas, we would already see the difference when we get the report for the for the mid-year performance. And unfortunately, that does not seem to have happened. So since the report are virtually the same, I will unfortunately be forced to repeat some of my questions once again. Yes, I think it's slide 22 there, or page 22, regarding incarceration. Once again, the issue of the additional bed spaces. Last time round, we were informed that, in fact, some replacement contractors have been appointed after the liquidation of the initial contractors, but it would seem that this is just a repeat of the first quarter's performance report. Then, Chair, turning to the over-expenditure in respect of electronic monitoring, I think we are implored to request for further or additional information. The first quarter performance report gave us an indication that at this stage, or at that stage, the targets by no means were met in respect of how many parolees were electronically monitored. Now, and I may have missed it, but I looked through the report three times, I don't see that specific target being reported on here today. Last time we had an under expenditure in respect of electronic monitoring, and the reason given was that these faulty systems were sent, if I remember correctly, to the service provider in Israel to be repaired. So the hopefully the fact that we're in a situation of over expenditure now means that they're back. So it would be good to hear whether they've been successfully repaired, what the number is of those parolees who are electronically monitored now. But more importantly, Chair, it is of concern that now we sit with a situation of over expenditure. So this whole situation of the contract having been awarded in such a manner that ultimately faulty systems must be sent overseas to be repaired, I think also needs to be addressed. Then in respect of the over-expenditure on fleet services, that's specifically one of those we were also informed of a huge over-expenditure in the first quarter. And then we also had this explanation or this remedial action of linking via audio feed in order to cut on travel costs. But now on page 62 we are informed that in fact this over expenditure will continue and is foreseen to be 898 million rand in conjunction with the electronic monitoring over expenditure. So the question now is, what effect is this audio visual conferences having? And then in addition, I would suggest that other measures also need to be put in place by the department. At this stage, it would still seem or the question must be asked, for example, in the Free State Northern Cape region where I come from, where the regional office is situated in Bloemfontein, if Springbok are to be visited, it's a round trip of nearly 1,800 kilometres. And then the question is still, is there measures in place to ensure that everybody who is to visit Springbok travels in one vehicle? Because we all know in the times we live in, I think that the temptation is always there to supplement your income by travelling alone and putting in that travel claim. So I want to know what measures the department is putting in place to really curb the expense on fleet services. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wish to welcome the report and to continue to congratulate you for your performance last year. And I support the overcompensation that you have actually encountered in terms of performance bonuses. This time they qualify. Remember in the past we complained about the awards and the bonuses when you were presenting before us qualified report. So what it means is that we can clearly see that the performance of the department is really improving. We want you to keep it up, but I'm also concerned about the overspending across the board. It's something that needs to be controlled so that you don't actually end up with a deficit at the end of the financial year. I didn't quite get information that tells me that you, in terms of the leases, you have actually done some adjustments. If you can just clarify me on that. Because what we have actually said is that all the buildings that we are leasing, we want to be sure that moving forward we try to actually buy buildings so that we don't have to lease. Also, in terms of electronic monitoring, it looks like you're doing well in terms of connectivity between the centers, in terms of your social integration program, but my area of concern is incarceration, electronic monitoring that has got to do with incarceration, which is what we've been talking about all the years, and we want to see progress in this financial year when it comes to monitoring of inmates in the correctional centers. And that relates to the kind of cases and the murders in the correctional centers, the rapes in the correctional centers, gangsterism in the correctional centers. We want to see that controlled. And of course, we have indicated in the past that you need to go and investigate the extent to which this will become a little bit difficult in relation to privacy of inmates. We don't seem to be getting that report, and I think we need a special report on this, so that we can be in the position in this financial year to work on this once and for all. In terms of goods and services for rehabilitation, I can see that you've actually overspent, but I want to know as to whether you've actually looked at, remember you have said you've got funds, but the equipment is obsolete. And this is why, therefore, we find it difficult for inmates to actually be put into those funds so that you can actually manage to produce your own feed. If you can indicate to what extent you are actually looking at that area. Your cost-cutting measures, I think, are quite impressive, but I think you can still do more. It's good you have actually cut down on events. And then official travel, of course, and Honorable Horn has just actually indicated some of the things that are important to these people traveling, whether they do travel together and things like that. But also, do your cars have a tracking system? Because that's another way of actually controlling the fleet that you've got in order for you to save on petrol, to save just on the cars that are not supposed to be overworked. And then you will still continue, I guess, when it comes to HR, to look at the extent to which utilizing two pieces of legislation for your employment benefit you or not benefit you, but previously the information that you gave to us was that if other people are actually employed according to the Correctional Services Act and others on Public Service Act, it actually creates a confusion. Please, can we have some movement on that so that we can deal with it once and for all in this financial year? Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. I would like to respond as follows, Chairperson, starting with the questions by Honourable Self on the second phase OSD, whether we are resolving that in terms of the Labour Court ruling. Chairperson, yes, the department, together with the organized, recognized labor unions, have sat down. We have provided a proposal to labor in terms of resolving the OSD second phase, as the court had retained that exercise. I'm sure that in a week's time, Chairperson, we shall then be able to establish whether labor accepts what the department is proposing as a settlement and also a way forward with that challenge. So far, Chairperson, the indications that we're getting is that labor has taken note of our situation and also are busy engaging their members. Pope Crew has engaged all the other provinces except the Eastern Cape. Public Servants Association is currently busy with the provinces. And we were supposed to have a DBC, Departmental Bargaining Council, on Friday, but it has been postponed to next week, Monday, where Labour now would come forward to say whether they accept our proposal as a department. And I think, Chairperson, it would be proper that we provide you with a status report in that regard, because it's a matter that the Honourable Member and other members have been raising consistently why we don't resolve these matters, because they have already appeared before a court of law. Chairperson, I would request CDC Smallberger to respond to the issue of bed space. I can only say the following. Chairperson, we had problems starting from Western Cape at Van Reinsdorp, Brandvlei and Warrenbock. We had problems. At least the Western Cape problems have now been resolved. We are about to fill those facilities. There are only some snack checks that they normally say they need to do. With regard to CMEX, the contractor is on site and removing debris from and removing all of the other unwanted brick and mortar from site to finalize that building. Zanin as well, Chairperson, we are having a contract on site. The two facilities that are moving in line with their own schedule is Standerton, Chairperson, and Escort. At least there we are moving. But I think CDC Smallberger will be in a better position to respond to the 435 bed space, how we report on that, which I think is a year target. Chairperson, the Honourable Member is correct with regard to the target. We have been given by both the oversight bodies that we report to, the Auditor General and as well as National Treasury, including DPME, that our targets have not been realistic, but have not been smart, as you would say, smart, measurable, realistic, time-bound, and so forth. So this is an exercise that we are continuously putting in place. the portfolio committee shall be provided with our 17, 18 targets, which we are just awaiting them to also pass those hurdles of National Treasury, Auditor General South African, DPME. And once we have done that, one hopes that this time around we shall have the targets that would be specific, that would be measurable, realistic and time-bound. I think that's the plan. So that we don't have targets that it is impossible to explain to another person what is it that we wanted to achieve. And also we either are modest in our targeting or we give ourselves targets that are almost difficult to achieve, like your overcrowding and your escape targets and indicators. I think we shall provide a better product this time around with regard to that. Chairperson, the Honourable Mr. Horn, also on bed space, since he's small beggar, will talk to that. This time around, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we took a decision last year that we are going to be involved in work that Public Works does. We have just appointed 6 regional facilities at the level of directors who have the necessary competencies, who will also sit in the finalization of contracts by service providers in as far as building of additional and or maintenance of our facilities is concerned. And this also will take care of the municipal services that Public Works is paying, managing for us at a fee. So these regional heads facilities will then take that responsibility to ensure that we pay municipal services on time, but we also pay the right and correct tariffs, because we don't have a system to establish how many liters of water we spend, how many electricity we have done. So we're going to put measures in place. We're currently busy with DPW, but importantly is when we allocate bids to service providers in the building industry and project managing our projects ourselves, it was function that we had been giving to DPW, but this time around we'll do it ourselves. DPW will then be able to come and monitor and establish whether we are doing the right thing. So in that regard, Chairperson, I can assure the committee that we have now appointed the 6 regional heads for facilities who will look into our ability to monitor our construction and building. Chairperson, the electronic monitoring, and we have as well a person responsible for it, Ms. Van Daba, who will come in and explain that clearly. What I can only say, Chair, is it's also one of those projects that has been referred to the Special Investigating Unit because procurement processes are being questioned to see as to whether they were done correctly. The Honourable Member is quite right. One of the subcontractors is from Israel, and therefore I think responding to that would be what I give to Ms. Vanda, but also providing that response, understanding the fact that it is a matter that is under investigation by the Special Investigating Unit, which we expect in a space of 2 to 3 months shall have concluded that investigation, and we will then provide that report to the committee as well. But indeed, we are having challenges of the number of gadgets that we are utilizing, but also the ones that get damaged by offenders and others that are faulty. I know that others were returned so that they can be repaired. The lady will provide that response to members. Fleet services, Chairperson, I think what we are referring to is government transport, where the department is responsible for maintenance, for fuel, and so forth. But when our officials are traveling utilizing their own vehicles, who are MMS, they then claim for petrol. But what we have done as a department, the capping that the CFO talked about, was to indicate that traveling has to have its own limits. Where it is possible, officials travel together. For instance, Springbok from Bloemfontein is 1,000 kilometers plus, and therefore people don't just travel to Springbok unless it is to conduct monitoring and evaluation. The regional commissioner, when she calls the regional board meetings, it would then be only the area commissioner who is situated in Upington, because Springbok is one of the centers that resort under Upington. But also, still, it's quite a number of kilometers traveling from Upington to Bloemfontein. And therefore, we utilizing mainly video conferencing. Chairperson and members would remember that we also installed a video link with all parole boards, and that comes also very handy when the regional commissioner would like to talk to the heads of center at Springbok, which is quite a distance from Bloemfontein. So that is what we are doing. But indeed, Chairperson, I know the concern of members, the combined regions, Free State, Northern Cape, and LMN, it's a nightmare to us, and part of the alignment of our structure was also to address that, which I have reported that it is now in front of the executive to finally finalize the organizational structure of correctional services. Chairperson, the other concern that was raised by the honorable member, Chairperson, we get encouragement from this committee and other oversight bodies where they from time to time make us aware of some of the faults, some of the mistakes that we do. And every time when we go back, we sit down and do a introspection of what is it that the committee and other oversight bodies are complaining of. And together with this team, we put measures in place to ensure that there's an improvement all the time. And now, because of the opinion that we received last year, it has placed even more pressure on us to strengthen our monitoring and evaluation by the units that are there in head office and in regions. But one can assure the committee that we already have appointed internal auditors so that we are able to provide to yourselves reports that have been audited and reports that are reliable and useful. And we want to thank the committee for that. Overspending, Chairperson, I think CFO will respond to that if there are these concerns. Indeed, we are rescheduling procurement, we are rescheduling projects, and constantly, almost on a weekly basis, the CFO meets with his provincial accountants to say, but can't we do this one maybe later? And how do we then ensure that we don't overspend? I can only say with regard to the performance bonuses, Honorable Chair and Honorable Majake, that we had to take that decision, and fortunately we had discussed that with Labour as well, that we won't be able to pay in 15-16, but only in 16-17. And we were very much encouraged by the positiveness and the enthusiasm from our members and the manner in which they understood. And I can assure the committee that only levels 2 to 12, who are whose unions are signatories to the resolution. In terms of levels 13 and above, including myself, we have taken a decision that unless we get a clean audit in correctional services, there is no way that we can even consider paying out performance bonuses for levels 13 and 14 and above. Chairperson, I think from my side, let me pause there. Just maybe the last one, the two pieces of legislation, Ms. Majake, Honorable, indeed it is a problem. Part of resolving the OSD was also to say, as spin-offs, we have been having a problem of a shift pattern with no averaging week. Therefore, once we have resolved the second phase, the second project that we are going to undertake with Labour's commitment is the shift pattern that gives us also its own challenges, but also the center base and non-center base that also takes into consideration the Public Service Act appointees and the Correctional Services Act appointees. So all of this we have put together in one basket to say, as we move from one, we go to the next and finalize within a short space of time that we have allocated to ourselves. Chairperson, maybe I should pause here and then maybe ask CDC Smallberger and Ms. Vandava to clarify the issues that I may have skipped. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Chairperson and honourable colleagues, honourable members, colleagues, Chairperson, allow me just to add what Mr. Modise was asking me to do. Chairperson, firstly, the indicator that Mr. Self was referring to of spiritual care, I think it's important to mention that the name of the indicator is not always self-explanatory, but if you go to the technical indicator descriptor, which is part of the annual performance plan, it gives more background. Maybe in short, I can just say that we are not measuring there the number of offenders or inmates who are attending church services. It's those offenders who are, on an individual basis, involved in spiritual care programs. So it is not those just who attend church services or just the gathering. Chairperson, in terms of the bed space, let me start with the first one of 435 of the new facilities that we will need to create those bed spaces. Chairperson, as we have indicated on the 2nd of November when we discussed the first quarter report, the 435 is for Tzanin. And as we are aware, Tzanin had the problem with the previous service provider. And just to, again, Chairperson, to say that Public Works has advertised the tender on the 23rd of September this year, and the closing date was 17 October. They are now busy with the evaluation phase of the tender, and we hope and believe, based on our engagement with Public Works, that the new contractor at Tzanin will be on site hopefully early in 2017. Chairperson, in terms of the other bed spaces, the 925, which is the target, consists of CMAX, Escort, Standerton Phase 1, and that will give you the 925. Chairperson, in terms of CMAX, as the National Commissioner indicated, a new service provider, Robex, was appointed and started on 17 August, and the contract period is 2 years. Meaning that they will need to be completed and hand over CMAX 17 August 2018. Chairperson, in terms of Standerton, the contractor there is Clear Choice Builders, and currently they are on schedule in terms of the building part that they are responsible for, and all indications are that within this financial year, the first phase of 604 beds will be delivered and available for utilization, Chair. But also need to mention, Chair, that there's a second phase that will be only completed in the following financial year. Chairperson, in terms of Escort, Sanyati is the contractor there. And Chairperson, the completion date was initially scheduled for the end of this financial year. Based on the last meeting with the contractors and Public Works, the final completion date is June 2070, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the question of Honourable Mamunjaki about the CCTV cameras in passages, Chairperson, we can also again just reiterate that initially we have received different legal opinions, and our minister have referred them to the National Council on Correctional Services for their advice. We did the presentation yesterday to them, and the department will await now the advice and feedback from the NCCS, whereafter the process will continue further. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I can indicate that on the issue of electronic monitoring, that currently, to date, we have 776 persons that are placed on electronic monitoring. And from April up to date, because the indicator is measuring the persons that are placed on electronic monitoring per month, not the ones that we are carrying over. Hence, you see that the numbers are a bit low. But from April up to date, we have placed 1,182 persons in electronic monitoring. Now, the repairs and the lost and the damaged, yes, we have sent 70 damaged devices for repairs, and we have received 100 damaged and faulty devices back. And what we are discovering now is that the battery life of the tags that we received, it lasts us 2 years. So we are now in the process of replacing the battery, replacing the tags with the new batteries. So we are in that process. And also in the buffer stock, because of the loss and the damage that we've spoken about, the continuous loss and the deliberate damaged tags, we have taken some of our buffer stock. The buffer stock is the 100% of the 1,000 that is, must always be there ready for the tagging. And we have taken some of those to replace the ones that so that we can ensure that the offenders are tagged at any given time. And currently at the buffer stock, we have 30 tags on the buffer stock. So, and the sanctions, because we have indicated in the first quarter that there are a lot of deliberate damages and the lost, what we have done, a sanction has been imposed in terms of our disciplinary code of the offenders, and the ones that are deliberately lost were reported to the police, and criminal cases have been opened for those, and parole has been revoked in a number of those, because we have seen that they do not appreciate themselves being outside. So those are the sanctions that we have imposed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable. I'm really very happy that when we started with this committee, it was very turbulent, and we really must commend you, because you have made very serious improvements, and you can see within the questions that the members put are pointed, they are specific, and they are also helping you to refine what you are doing. We hope you keep up that work. I think we must also thank Mr. Sell for his interest in this committee and contribution. And thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Oh, thanks, man. You helped me with this charger. I don't know.